Good afternoon, 4:30 and 44 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Dan Conte.
And I'm Ashley Chapman.
People get so caught up in, oh, I don't want any religious schools or only private schools and all of this. And it's like, look at the kids and look at the success there.
Senator Rand Paul says the next Secretary of Education should be more concerned with results that benefit kids and not educational philosophy.
The DEA levels its biggest ever civil penalty against an opiate supplier in eastern Kentucky.
And most of the foundation is now in place for Rowan County's new jail.
In sports, UK's defensive coordinator may be headed for Colorado.
But Luke has the business news.
Cloudy and cooler this evening, lows in the mid-30s. We'll have a complete check of your forecast after this news.
The acting U.S. attorney for Eastern Kentucky has announced what he calls a historic settlement in a drug case. Carlton Shear says it involved multiple U.S. attorney and DEA offices across the country and ended with McKesson Corporation agreeing to pay a $150 million civil penalty for alleged violations of the Controlled Substances Act. Shear says the firm supplied opiates to pharmacies in eastern Kentucky. He says McKesson's failure to report suspicious orders fueled the opioid epidemic in the Appalachian region. The settlement is considered DEA's largest civil penalty ever for violations of the CSA. As part of the agreement, the company's Ohio-based office is suspended from selling controlled substances for 2 years.
Much of the concrete foundation, along with some of its steel, is now in place for Rowan County's new detention center. The $18 million facility is being constructed at a site on U.S. 60, just east of downtown Moorhead. The judge executive, Walter Blevins, says because of some recent cold snow and rain, the project is now about 8 days behind schedule. However, Blevins thinks crews will be able to rectify that situation and get things back on track.
I'm hoping the next 6 months we'll have everything under roof, I hope. And then, of course, you've got to finish all that out, but I'm hoping that we'll have the majority of it by the next 6 months. It'll take time to get in and actually finish the building, but it'll have maybe not the roof, but at least the concrete foundation on top of it. But the roof itself, that'll be down the road.
It's projected that Rowan's new 300-bed detention center will be ready to open in early to mid 2018.
Moorhead Mayor Jim Tom Trent says his goal for this year is to finally get the city moving forward on the building of new homes for its police and fire departments. The proposal has been in the discussion phase for the past several months. Trent wants to get locations for the new stations nailed down soon.
In my opinion, if we can just get one, the police station, if we don't decide to do both for sure, and I think it's leaning more towards doing two different ones. If we can get one, get the location picked out and get plans going, I would love to look at maybe possibly breaking ground sometime next year.
Trent says building a replacement for the 80-year-old outmoded building that currently houses Moorhead's police department is the top priority. He points out that the city's fire department already has two stations within the city that it can rely on until it gets a new facility. Officials hope to spend a total of $4.5 million on both projects.
Nearly 300 Kentucky Guardsmen will help provide security at Friday's presidential inauguration in Washington. Major Stephen Martin is with the Kentucky Guard.
The majority of the troops they're going are out of the 198th Military Police Battalion, and they will be helping to augment law enforcement. Kentucky has a storied career in law enforcement specifically. We work Thunder over Louisville and Kentucky Derby every year in the Capital Region.
Martin says the soldiers and airmen will help with traffic control, crowd management, transportation, communication, and overall security.
The 70 campuses of the Kentucky Community and Technical College system are all safer because of additional security measures made possible by the governing body of the KCTCS. That's according to the system's president, Dr. Jay Box. He made the comment this week on WYMT's Issues and Answers.
The Council on Post-Secondary Education allowed us to add $2 of our tuition to help address a safety and security need with all, as you know, with all of the violence that's been happening on campuses across the nation. There's a federal mandate that requires us to establish very secure campuses.
Bach says a man said to be armed came on to one of the KCTCS campuses in Jefferson County this week. He says a lockdown was immediately implemented and the man was quickly arrested in a parking lot.
The Kentucky Community and Technical College System has inked a deal to assist other colleges and universities around the U.S. MSPR's Kenzie Thompson reports.
The KCTCS has signed an agreement with 45 colleges and universities across the nation. The National Intercollegiate Mutual Aid Agreement allows these institutions to provide help to each other in times of emergencies. This help includes supplies, staff, or equipment, and once things at a school have been stabilized, it can begin to pay back the money owed for the services they needed help with. According to KCTCS Crisis Manager Sean Fay, some emergencies they are preparing for range anywhere from shootings to natural disasters. Fay also says this is a way for schools to receive assistance without the risk. Reporting for Morehead State Public Radio News, I'm Kenzie Thompson.
Senator Rand Paul says he's more interested in educational strategies that work for children, and that's something he encourages the next Secretary of Education to pursue. The Kentucky Republican serves on the Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, which Monday quizzed President-elect Donald Trump's nominee to head that department. Paul applauds Betsy DeVos's efforts on behalf of school choice and charter schools. He says he's more concerned with actual improvements in education than different philosophies on it.
For those who have this philosophic hatred for vouchers and school choice and things, watch the movie Waiting for Superman and see the mom with tears down her face whose child got the lottery and won to get in a good school, and then the one who didn't get in.
Paul says he's a supporter of public schools, but he's concerned about communities where they are underperforming. He says half of the kids dropping out of school today are children of color.
A nonpartisan think tank in Ohio that advocates for quality charter schools says implementation of the 2015 law cracking down on the industry appears to be on the right track. The Thomas B. Fordham Institute based its finding on an analysis released today that looked at state agencies' efforts to enforce the new Ohio law, which had bipartisan support. The review found that 49 of 50 provisions of the law had been implemented in a verifiable way 11 months after its enactment. The law established a new sponsor evaluation system, eliminated sponsor hopping that had allowed low-performing schools to escape accountability, tackled conflicts of interest, and closed various loopholes. Ohio's 20-year-old charter school sector comprises 373 schools with roughly 120,000 students.
Governor Bevin has appointed Teresa Ann Reinhardt of Flemingsburg as magistrate for the 3rd District of Fleming County. She replaces John Sims, who was elected state representative in November. Reinhardt attended St. Mary of the Plains College in Kansas and Maysville Community College before embarking on a teaching career at St. Patrick High School in Maysville. She'll serve until the position is filled in the November 2018 election.
An official from the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet says an unmarked cemetery that was discovered during a survey of land that will be used as part of a bridge project near Kentucky 57 in Lewis County will be moved. Alan Blair says the cemetery likely dates back to the late 19th century or early 20th century, adding it no longer has any headstones. A person living near the site informed surveyors about the graves. Ground-penetrating radar was then used to find their exact locations.
We don't take these things lightly. It's a very serious matter, and you know, no one likes to move a cemetery, but we have proper procedures in place so that we can do it in a respectful manner. And you know, in this case, we'll be able to take a cemetery that was destined to be forgotten, you know, and be able to move it into a situation where it will be cared for forever.
As Blair noted, the graves will be moved to another location where they will be taken care of on a regular basis. At this point, he's hoping someone will provide the cabinet with information on who was buried in the old cemetery.
Mayor Steve Gilmore says he wants to make Ashland more business-friendly and a great choice for new light industries. But the U.S. Census Bureau says only about 17% of its population is between the ages of 20 and 34. That's the ideal population for business. By contrast, 25% of Ashland residents are 60 years or older. Gilmore doesn't consider the city's older demographic as an obstacle to economic development. He says it shows that people value the city's quality of life and choose to stay there when they retire. However, he also notes it should be a factor when the city assesses the need for new revenues.
I always want to make the point to my commission and to the public that we're sensitive to the fact that probably over half our population is retired, or add another percentage, maybe a quarter, unemployed. We've got a lot of people who lost jobs. So the burden is on a lot of people that can't always come up with the things that they need to pay. As we do the budget, we need to be sensitive to that.
The most recent census figures show Ashland has about 22,000 residents. The city's population peaked at just over 31,000 in 1960.
The Maysville Mason County Industrial Development Authority has initiated the search for a new executive director. According to the Maysville Ledger-Independent, current executive director Gene Weaver plans to retire on February 1st. Executive director of the Buffalo Trace Area Development District, Amy Kennedy, says an oversight committee comprised of county and city officials will choose from candidates nationwide. Kennedy says job advertisements will go out within the next 2 weeks.
Six Lexington projects have cleared the first hurdle in the annual Night Cities Challenge, a nonprofit initiative that asks, what's your best idea to make cities more successful? Here's Josh James.
It's the third go-round for the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation Challenge, and Lexington continues to snag more finalist nods with each year.
Lexington, for a small to mid-sized market, really has been the standout.
Foundation Program Director Lily Weinberg says 2017's contenders include Civic Lex, which would bring together citizen journalists and others to create an online local news hub, Retrofitting the Retro, an effort to beautify Southland Drive and make it more pedestrian-friendly, and Plant and Play, a North Limestone initiative to build an adventure playscape and community garden at Castlewood Park. Christopher Nunn with No Lie.
We're building a huge rain garden up in Castlewood Park to address the stormwater issues where runoff from the park is flooding adjacent properties' basements and otherwise causing damage.
Lexington already has three Knight-funded projects underway, transforming a Loudoun Avenue bus depot into a public market, adding more family-friendly programming to Phoenix Park, and Parking Lot Diaries, an effort to gather input and test activities to create a more dynamic downtown. In Lexington, I'm Josh James reporting.
University of Kentucky officials have pledged to reduce carbon emissions on campus by 25% by 2025. The Lexington Herald Leader reports that President Eli Capilouto has credited student organizations with pressuring the administration to be more proactive in addressing climate change. The effort will include implementing new technologies and energy conservation methods into facilities, as well as working toward a long-term goal of carbon neutrality. The university's Office of Sustainability will report yearly progress on the goal. The student organization Green Thumb First started pushing The student organization Green Thumb first started pushing the administration to do more in 2012. Green Thumb is part of the Kentucky Student Environmental Coalition, a statewide network of environmental groups at 22 campuses.
And finally this afternoon, propane-converted vehicles are already saving Carter County taxpayers money. That's according to Judge Executive Mike Malone. MSPR's Kyle Blankenbuehler reports.
According to the Grayson Journal-Times, Judge Malone says the county prefers to lease Ford vehicles because they come with provisions to convert vehicles to burn propane. The county also recently leased several dump trucks, which will be used by the county road department. Diesel engines can be converted to propane too, but Malone says it's cost prohibitive at this time. Malone notes that several Kentucky government agencies have turned to leasing instead of buying vehicles outright in order to save money. In the 4 months since the first vehicles were converted, Malone says the county has saved nearly $4,000. Reporting for Morehead State Public Radio News, I'm Kyle Blingenbuehler.
Taking a look at the weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, including the counties of Carter, Boyd, and Rowan. Tonight, mostly cloudy, areas of valley fog with lows in the mid-30s. Thursday, areas of valley fog early, highs in the upper 50s with a chance of rain at 30%. Thursday, showers likely, chance of rain near 100% with a slight chance of thunderstorms as well, lows in the upper 40s. The rain continues into Friday, 50% chance of rain with highs in the mid-60s. However, your weather will clear out to partly sunny in the afternoon. And Saturday will be mostly cloudy with a 30% chance of showers and highs in the upper 60s. Temperatures for the surrounding region, it's currently 45 degrees in Ashland, 42 in Flemingsburg, 45 degrees in Inez. Lexington is sitting at 44 degrees. It is 43 degrees in Winchester, and right now on the campus of Morehead State University, it is a brisk 45 degrees.
4:46 on our feature segment this afternoon, Kentucky's largest city has reported a decrease in its homeless population. Greg Stottlemyre has the story.
The woman who directs Louisville's effort to combat homelessness says the city has made a big dent in the problem. Yet on any given night, as many as 1,600 homeless people still are on the streets or in shelters. Coalition for the Homeless Executive Director Natalie Harris says a focus on veterans has helped Louisville reduce homelessness.
First, we had to address the backlog because there were so many homeless veterans in the city. And then we see, on average, about 25 new veterans who become homeless in the city each month, and they have maintained housing 25 a month.
Harris says over the past 2 years, the city has eliminated the backlog by housing 1,100 veterans. According to a report from the U.S. Conference of Mayors, Louisville's overall homeless population last year was down more than 26% from where it was in 2009. Nationwide, the decrease was less than 13%. Harris says the coalition can't let down because other segments of the city's homeless population have not changed. She says there is a great need for emergency shelter for families, which, according to the report, comprise about a fourth of the city's homeless population. Harris says Louisville has only 12 emergency housing units for families, with the current waiting list at 43.
And about six of those get housed every month, which means we have people on a waiting list for shelter who will never get it. So that's one population we're really concerned about.
And then there's hunger, where, according to the mayor's report, requests last year for emergency food assistance increased 2% in the nation's cities. However, in the greater Louisville area, requests were up 15%, according to Stan Sigwald with the Dare to Care Food Bank. Sigwald says meeting the hunger needs of people is critical to helping them get back on their feet.
If it can help programs that are helping them address their many varied issues, then we feel like we're being successful and we're doing what this community needs us to do.
Louisville's new focus is on youth homelessness, where, according to Harris, more than 400 young adults ages 18 to 24 are homeless. She says more than half of them are either pregnant or parenting.
So it's young kids out on their own, already starting their own families. If we don't do something now, we're going to have a whole other generation of people who are homeless.
I'm Greg Stottlemyre reporting for Kentucky News Connection.
4:49, all things considered from NPR at 5 o'clock, and Braxton has sports in 30 seconds.
Support for MSPR comes from Eat Gallery, exquisite art treasures in historic downtown Maysville, Kentucky. Eat Gallery works with gold and silversmiths who specialize in creating wearable art jewelry. For the jewelry you no longer wear or heirlooms that need updating, Eat Gallery can create wearable pieces that will last generations. Open 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday. Eat Gallery can be reached at 606-564-5578 and online at eatgallery.com.
Good afternoon with Morehead State Public Radio Sports. I'm Braxton Howard. Kentucky football defensive coordinator DJ Elliott is leaving the Cats for Colorado. According to FootballScoop.com and the Lexington Herald Leader, Elliott has agreed to become the defensive coordinator for the University of Colorado. Head coach Mark Stoops took over the defensive play calling from Elliott last season after the team started 1-2 and gave up 151 points in their first three games. Morgan County has hired Mark Easterling as their new head football coach. Easterling was an assistant coach for the Cougars from 2012 through 2015. Brian Turner was fired last month after 8 years as Morgan's bench boss. After completing a 3-1 homestand, the Morehead State men's basketball team has OVC road action tomorrow night. Interim coach Preston Spradlin's Eagles will visit Austin-Peay at 8. The Governors have won 2 games in a row.
Very good Austin-Peay team. I haven't watched them other than the games that they've played against our common opponents, but I know that they're very good. They're very good at their place. They have very good guard play. So we've got to get ready to play.
While MSU is 3-2 in conference, Austin-Peay is 2-3. The Govs feature the talents of guard Josh Robinson, who leads the OVC with an average of nearly 22 points a game. Without a game until this weekend, Morehead State women's basketball coach Greg Todd is using this week to tune up his Eagles, who have dropped their last 2 games. According to Todd, the Eagles haven't played very well offensively recently. He thinks the key to turning that situation around is to get them to play faster.
As their strength, and if the slower we play, I think it benefits most of our opponents, where they have more go-to players in a half-court offense. So the more up and down we can get, the better.
At 4-2 in the OVC, the MSU women will host conference arch rival Eastern Kentucky on Saturday. Even though his fifth-ranked team earned an 88-81 win last night at Mississippi State, Kentucky basketball coach John Calipari isn't pleased with his Wildcats. UK turned the ball over 16 times and nearly let an 18-point second-half lead slip away from them. Calipari says his young Cats often get into what he calls an AAU mindset of playing like individuals instead of as a team, and often come out of timeouts and don't do what they've been told.
That's who we are right now. I thought we were a month away. We may be 2 months away. Now, that being said, Mississippi State played well. They shot 54%. They turned it over some, but we did too. And the crazy thing was, they didn't press, they didn't trap, they didn't do anything, and we did. That's the most turnovers we may have had all year.
At 16-2, UK returns home Saturday to face number 24, South Carolina. 12th-ranked Louisville is preparing for an ACC game Thursday night. After last weekend's emotional victory against number 18 Duke, Coach Rick Pitino's Cardinals will try to extend their 3-game winning streak as they face Clemson at 9 o'clock at the Yum Center.
Emotionally, we've got to fight every single game. We've played one hell of a schedule, and it's not going to stop because Clemson's a terrific team. We still got to go at Pitt, at Virginia, at North Carolina. It's not going to stop.
The Cards are 15-3 overall and 3-2 in conference. The Rhine County boys basketball team is getting set to host George Rogers Clark tomorrow, coming off of a win at Russell last night. Head coach Sean Thacker says his team will have to be well prepared to face GRC and head coach Josh Clark.
He's going to bring pressure from all aspects. He'll run and jump you. He'll track in the half court. He'll follow the first pass and trap you. So, you know, you're going to have to be on your toes. He tries to disrupt your rhythm, and the kind of things that you do practice today will be focused in on handling pressure and understanding spacing and being able to attack.
George Rogers Clark is 13-7 on the year and have won their last 5 games. Baseball's Hall of Fame results will be announced this evening at 6 o'clock. Tim Raines, in his 10th and final year of eligibility, appears likely to gain election, along with Jeff Bagwell. Ivan Rodriguez, eligible for the first time, and Trevor Hoffman could also make it. Preseason preparations are underway for the Morehead State softball team. Coach David Williams is optimistic the Eagles will be able to improve on last year's 26-27 finish.
We're deeper in a lot of areas. Last year's team did a good job, and we did a lot of things that we haven't done in many years here. But we have a little bit more depth this year, so there's been a little more competition in practice. And I think we've got some more options potentially to go to, and a lot of those things will iron themselves out as we start to play some games.
The MSU softball team season starts on February the 10th with tournament action at Kennesaw State. The Eagles' first game will be against St. Louis. Finally in sports, Venus Williams was among those advancing in the Australian Open today. AP correspondent Graham Agars reports.
Despite nursing an injured right elbow that forced her to withdraw from the doubles tournament, veteran Venus Williams reached the singles third round of the Australian Open with a straight sets victory over Stephanie Vogler. Williams was joined by fellow Americans Jack Sock and Sam Querrey, but John Isner had his run ended 9-7 in the fifth by the German Misha Zverev. Women's defending champion Angelique Kerber also advanced, but for the second time struggled for 3 sets. No problems though for Andy Murray and Roger Federer. Graham Agars, Melbourne.
That's it for sports. For Morehead State Public Radio, I'm Braxton Howard.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Eagle basketball will host a doubleheader with Eastern Kentucky University on Saturday. The women's game begins at 5:30, and the men tip off at 7:45. Tickets and more information from the MSU Eagle ticket office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
National offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. U.S. stocks closed mixed as investors digested remarks from the top Federal Reserve official after having parsed through a series of corporate earnings and economic data. And at the close, the Dow Industrials did finish with a loss of 22.05 at 19,804.72. The S&P 500 was up 4 at 2271.89, and the NASDAQ Composite was up 16.93 at 5555.65. New York Stock Exchange breadth was 15 to 13 in favor of winning stocks over losers. In prepared remarks, Fed Chair Janet Yellen said the U.S. economy is closing in on the central bank's goals, giving it impetus to start reducing the extreme levels of support it has provided over the past decade. Investors also focused on corporate quarterly results as Goldman Sachs and Citigroup posted better-than-expected earnings. Goldman received a surge in trading revenue, but Goldman stock fell 0.75%, and Citigroup stock was down 1.7%. In economic news, the consumer price index rose 0.3%, in line with expectations, putting it up 2.1% year over year. This was also the first time CPI rose above 2% since 2014. Other economic data released today included industrial production, which grew 0.8% in December, and the NAHB survey for January, which showed homebuilder sentiment pulled back slightly. The Fed also released its latest beige book, which said that a pickup in manufacturing, widespread reports of labor shortages, and improving business investment all set the stage for the central bank's December rate hike. Overseas European equities were slightly higher as the Stock 600 index gained almost 0.2%, this a day before the European Central Bank delivers its latest monetary policy decision. In Asia, stocks closed mostly higher, with Shanghai advancing 0.14% and the Nikkei 225 rising almost 0.5%. U.S. crude prices fell 2.4% to finish at $51.20 a barrel amid the prospects of rising shale production. And in terms of your Dow Industrial stocks, the best performers were American Express and Travelers, and the worst performers were United Health and ExxonMobil. In the S&P 500, the best performers were Fastenal and Mead Johnson, and the worst performers were Mallinckrodt and Target. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was Ashland Incorporated down 51 cents at 110.44, CSX down $1.21 at 36.88, AEP down 35 cents at 63.46, AK Steel up 63 cents at 10.08, Marathon Petroleum up 17 cents at 48.90, and U.S. Bancorp was up 25 cents to finish at 50.56. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Taking a look at your weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, including the cities of Ashland, Grayson, and Moorhead. Tonight, mostly cloudy, areas of valley fog, lows in the mid-30s. Thursday, areas of valley fog early with highs in the upper 50s, a 30% chance of rain as well. Thursday night, the rain stays with us, chance goes up to nearly 100% with a slight chance of thunderstorms as well. Lows drop into the upper 40s. Friday, cloudy with a chance of showers, 50% chance of rain throughout the day, partly sunny in the afternoon though, with highs in the mid-60s. And Saturday, mostly cloudy with a 30% chance of showers and highs in the upper 60s. Temperatures for the surrounding region, 45 degrees in Ashland, 42 in Flemingsburg, 45 in Inez, 44 in Lexington. Winchester is at 43 degrees, and it is currently 44 degrees right here on the campus of Morehead State University.
And that's it for us on Mountain Edition. We had help from Chuck Baraz, Samantha Morrill, Braxton Howard, Jacob Lindberg, Kenzie Thompson, and Kyle Blankenbuehler from WUKY, Josh James, and from the Kentucky News Connection, Greg Stottlemyer. This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY Morehead, Dan Translator, W202 BH Inez. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Ashley Chapman and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Dan Conte, Moorhead State Public Radio News. ATC is next. It's 5 o'clock.